I'm going to call each one of the panelists up because we do want to get started. As I'm talking, Gail Sussman, Managing Director, U.S. Public Finance, Moody's. That means you can come up. Mr. Lawrence Imsall, President of the Civic Federation. Elaine Neckert, State Representative, 57th District. And Yvette Shields, reporter, Bond Buyer Newspaper. Everybody situated up there? So I'm going to ask everybody, and I'm going to keep pretty strict on time, to do a 2 to 3 minute opening statement. And then we've got a couple of questions, but and we'll probably have some along the way. Let's start with, oh, just for kicks, since he's on a panel with all women, Lawrence.
I'd like to announce how well I fit in being around all women. Having 7 sisters and 3 daughters, it's not unusual for me to be at a table with all women. Thanks, Jackie. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. 2 or 3 minutes to talk about what's next for the state of Illinois?
No, just your opening comments.
Oh, my opening comment is the state of Illinois, after over two years, finally has a budget. We join 49 other states that use this governing technique when we have a budget. We avoided the disaster of seeing our state drop to non-investment grade or junk bond status. Over the last 2 years, the state of Illinois has done incredible damage to our most vulnerable citizens. Who pay the price for the financial recklessness that has been operating without a budget? We are far from out of the woods. There are so many good things that are included in the budget. How we got to this budget is problematic as well, because it really requires the legislature and the governor to still pull together and go out and sell to investors, including the rating agencies, the advantages of lending us $6 billion so that we can pay off some of our operating bills. With that, I'll pass it on to my other colleagues.
There we go.
Elaine.
I'm also delighted to be here. And Rich, if you're watching, I'm sorry that I'm a poor substitute for you up here. I probably won't be as cynical as Rich about anything. And I don't have encyclopedic knowledge of the history of the General Assembly in the way that Rich does. So I will do my best. It's been a little odd having a budget as a member of the General Assembly, because you get to the point where being in crisis mode is the new normal, and not being in crisis mode feels kind of like, wow, this is kind of nice. I like not being in crisis mode. I thought I'd talk a little bit just about, you know, why it took so long and how we actually got there. And a couple of lines from Hamilton come to mind. My favorite lines are, you don't have the votes. And that was really kind of where we thought we were. And then all of a sudden, it started to gel. Members were meeting from both sides of the aisle in all kinds of meetings leading up to the fact that we found out that some Republicans were willing to take the leap with us, and we turned from you don't have the votes to, in fact, you do have the votes. And it took some of us a while to really comprehend that we did have the votes to get this done. But that was really, it was really the rank and file members of the General Assembly that came together and developed the trust and got to the point where we could put the votes on to get a budget, a major accomplishment. The other line from Hamilton that I appreciate a lot is winning is easy, governing is harder. And as Lauren said, we are now in the point where we're governing, which is novel and new for the last couple of years, and very excited about that. But we still have a lot of governing to do, which will be hard. There's still a very significant lack of trust between the major players, I think, in the Capitol, and getting to the point where we can continue to govern and maybe rectify some of the damage that has been done will be equally challenging, I think, especially coming up to an election year. Thank you.
So in keeping with the Hamilton theme, I don't want us to miss our shot. We've got Senator Hastings, we've got Representative Turner, we've got some, I think that's it for all the General Assembly members. Did I miss anybody else? Let's give them a hand. They have a tough job. Yvette?
Well, thank you for having me. I thought I would start off by sharing a highlight of my 4th of July weekend, which, as many of you will recall, and Elaine will especially recall well, that's when we were headed into the new fiscal year. It was June 30th on Friday. Whether or not the state was going to get to a budget agreement was very rocky. And it was a very real prospect that the state, and when I say the state, I am talking about a sovereign state with great power over spending and revenues, there was the very real prospect that we would be the first state ever to be cut to junk, which I will quote Lawrence, you know, that would be a real disaster in many ways. So, as things were unfolding over the weekend, the House, you know, pulled it off over the weekend, and then the Senate acted and then overrode the governor on the 4th. I went to a friend's 4th of July barbecue, and I walk in late, and everyone at the party descends upon me, right? These are not reporter types or financial types, and they all start quizzing me. What's going on? Is the state about to fall down to a speculative grade rating? And what does that mean? And, you know, that was a shock to my system, because usually when I go to parties I start talking about work and I bring up unfunded pension liabilities or...
It's a party killer.
You are just the life of the party, aren't you?
Mood killer.
Or this is a special killer, is Chapter 9 municipal bankruptcy. You know, their eyes, like, just gloss over, and, you know, I lose them, and they're off to get another drink. So why do I bring this up on a panel discussion about, you know, the state going forward? That's because I really believe that it was because of the widespread media coverage that really put the pressure on the legislature to act. And that sort of layered on top of the higher ed community, what was, you know, how they had been decimated, and the human services community, how they had been decimated. It just all really piled up and resulted in something happening, along with, I would remind everyone that on Friday, the federal court had ruled that the state was going to have to start making $586 million in monthly Medicaid payments and also to begin to pay down a $2 billion backlog. So, you know, why do I bring this up in terms of going forward? It's because I really believe that the pressure has to stay amplified, maybe not that intense, but amplified, so that we don't fall backwards. We are still on the cusp of junk status. Moody's rates us at the lowest level and has a negative outlook. You know, Fitch has, we're one rating level away, and S&P has us at the lowest level, but with a stable outlook. And there are lots of triggers, that potential pressure points that are coming up, right? So in the fall, we'll find out the latest actuarial figures for the pension funds. There's a lot of uncertainty referring to whether the budget is balanced, right? Because the $500 million that the budget relies on from the creation of a Tier 3 is very uncertain. We're about to go to market to borrow $6 billion, and the budget doesn't fully account for all the debt service. And I'll wrap it up, because I know I'm probably over my time. I get this question a lot. Why should I care what Wall Street thinks of the state, or why should I care what the state is rated? And it's very simple, right? It's about money. The state pays. Right now, their bonds in the secondary market are trading a couple percentage points almost over what a AAA rated state like Indiana or Missouri would pay. And market folks are saying that when we come to market, we're probably going to have to pay somewhere between 5 and 6%. And that's a pretty big penalty to have to pay 3 percentage points over what, you know, other states pay. And also, in the municipal market, there's something called the contagion effect and cluster risk. And what that means is that every single borrower in the state, whether you're the AAA-rated DuPage County or the junk-rated Chicago Public Schools, you pay some penalty. The high-yield portfolio manager for Nuveen Investments, a Chicago-based investment firm, They appeared during a legislative hearing. I think maybe Lane was there. And he put a number on it. He said that local governments pay a penalty of that amounts to $930 million annually simply for having the Illinois name, you know, attached to their name. And I'll end on that.
Thank you, Yvette. Gail?
So if you think Yvette is a party killer, imagine me at a party. Does this work? Maybe I'll just borrow yours.
You just have to be closer, I think.
I generally don't have a problem people hearing me. Okay, so there's been a little bit of discussion about reading, so I thought I would sort of take the middle road here. And for those who may not be as familiar, just sort of do some definitions, explain what we do, explain what a rating is, and talk a little bit about what that bottom of the investment grade scale looks like and what does it look like for ratings that are below that point. So as most of you probably know, a rating really is our opinion of an issuer's creditworthiness, the likelihood that they're going to pay back the principal and interest that they borrowed from investors. So it could be muni investors, it could be corporates, it doesn't really matter. We have a 21-point rating scale. We use the same scale for all of the sectors, whether it's a bank or a corporation or a government. It is true that the state of Illinois is in a dubious position of being rated Baa3, as Yvette said, which is our lowest investment grade rating. The ratings that are below that, we don't like to call junk because the top end of the investment grade spectrum, which is around the BA range, statistically and from a perspective of relative creditworthiness, it's not our view that a rating in the BA range is about to default by any means. It just means that it has more speculative elements to it. And the other thing just to keep in mind is that we don't really have an opinion. We don't give people advice about whether to buy or sell our securities. We don't give issuers advice on what to do. But there is a lot of conversation around what it means when you tip over from that Baa3 rating level to the BA level and what it means for investors. So some investors have to actually keep all the securities that they own in the investment grade space. So once a rating drops below investment grade into the spec grade area, they sometimes have to sell it. So it is a very big cliff for the investors. So, you know, just a couple things that I would mention. Our ratings, as you may know, run from AAA to C. Our median state rating is actually AA1, which is one notch below the highest rating of AAA. So you can see from that level, the state of Illinois is pretty far away from that. The median local government rating is AA3, which is also still very high. And the negative outlook that the state at Baa3 has implies that we believe that there's around a 50% or more chance that that rating may actually move again. And some of the potential movement relates not so much to the budget itself, but this issue about sustainability of their ability to balance. So that financing that each of you were talking about is a huge financing that really is intended to provide more liquidity back to the state for these unpaid bills that they have racked up during the time that there was no budget. So I would just leave it at that. We don't like to use the word junk. We use speculative grade because nothing is junk. And happy to answer any questions. Thank you for having me.
I like that. So all right, that means we are in a speculative position. We're not junk.
No.
You like that? Okay.
Junk makes for a better headline.
I like speculative. It sounds like glitter and sparkle, so it makes me happy. Thank you, Gail. I'm going to go back to Lawrence, and I'm going to try to – I think I know some of the things that Lawrence is going to talk about, but I just want to kind of pour, I don't have any idea.
I don't know.
I just kind of want to throw this in because I think you're probably going to hit this in some of your notes already. Elise Hoffenberg. Elise, are you here? She's way in the back there. Hi. She said that how do we get our way out of this situation? The budget deficit and the pension obligations grow by day. How do we address that? And I just have a feeling that you were probably going to talk about some of that.
I'm sorry, the question was how did we get here or how are we getting out of here?
I think it's how do we dig our way out of the situation, but how do we get here is a good right. way to start with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, both the perspective. How did we get here? Mm-hmm. By making a lot of smaller, short-sighted decisions over a long period of time without paying attention to what the long-term implications were. It's basically political expediency. And when you break that down, all of us bear a responsibility for encouraging political expediency. The difficulty... Oh, thank you. The difficulty in trying to say one person is to blame, one General Assembly, is that the main drivers of the state's financial precariousness are the long-term pension obligations, the highly leveraged debt that we have put ourselves in that position, and the need to continue to borrow, right? So the I just can't say it. And there's two slides that are, where we passed out on your table that in your free time writing on the L, I encourage you to whip out and talk to your friends about. The first would be the amount of debt per Chicagoan that we all owe our government. And you'll see it's the one that's in color. And it basically shows that in 2011, the average Chicagoan owed about $27,000 to the government for both its unfunded state and local pensions and the amount of long-term state and local government debt. And now that number, the most recent number on that chart is 2015, it's about $33,000 per person. So we're highly leveraged. The other chart, and I'll get to that more, is about the amount of debt service that the state of Illinois needs going forward before, or including actually, the borrowing that's going to be included as part of the budget agreement. So you get out of a very deep, dark, painful hole by stop digging, right? As long as we didn't have a budget, we not only were digging, we were tearing the walls down. So the hole was getting bigger and bigger. Not having a budget is not the same as not spending money. Not paying your vendors is not the same thing as being financially responsible. We built into our obligations enormous penalties that are self-imposed on what we pay our vendors. I may have mentioned the 9-12% interest that the state is going to pay for a large portion of the $16 billion in unpaid bills that it has. That was done, and one of the ways that it was done was to ignore the financial reality. For over two years, we did not appropriate for employee and retiree health care, but we promised the vendors that we would pay them a penalty of up to 12% interest on that. So the state employees and the retirees went to the hospital, received medical services, of course, and then we not only couldn't pay them, we promised we would pay them more. So we have a lot of bad practices that have to be resolved. The pension hole is the biggest issue for the state of Illinois. Coming up with a plan that allows it to not grow more than it already has, coming up with a plan that allows our core government services to be delivered, that our obligations to be paid, and that we can build some confidence amongst the public, amongst businesses, among Amazon, who we think would be interested in coming to Illinois, as long as it doesn't look at our financial sheets. That's how we're going to get out of it, with a lot of truthful, painful, but necessary tax increases and a reduction in the footprint of our government. We have 6,978 units of local government that all demand property taxes in the state of Illinois. You cannot address property tax reform or property tax stability without consolidation. We have more units of government than every state in the union, more than twice any state in the union, and we simply can't afford to keep going down that path. Most importantly, we cannot afford to let our General Assembly and our state go another year, next year, without a budget. We've tried this grand experiment. We know it's fantastically expensive to not have a budget. The pressure in the citizens, I would agree with Yvette, it was because people were paying attention. People weren't paying attention to me over the last 2.5 years when I told them how horrible it was that we weren't appropriating for mental health services. People weren't paying attention when I tried to explain to them what $130 billion unfunded pension liability meant. But people did pay attention when we said we were no longer going to be able to participate in the Powerball lottery. That had a very significant impact on the mindset of our state. And it is half in joking that I say that, but the reality is that was a real example. People want, not necessarily myself or these people at this table, we don't necessarily wait in line at the gas station to buy our Powerball tickets, but Illinoisans do. And when it was threatened that we were no longer going to be part of Powerball, people started paying attention and saying, what's going on with the state of Illinois? Same thing with the road fund. When July 1 came and we didn't have appropriations, it became for the first time the reality that we needed that people should pay attention. So that's how we're going to get out, by a lot of painful but necessary sacrifices by all of us.
Thank you. So many good questions, and I knew Lawrence was going to touch on a couple of those. Lawrence, I do listen to you. Just want you to know. I always listen to you.
Me too.
You do? Good.
And I quote them and write about them.
Good, because the next question is for you. Wayne Galasek? Okay, so I probably just butchered your name. I'm sorry. From the American Insurance Schools. This is a pretty broad question, but I'd like for you to address it if you can, Yvette. The media confuses the issue. How bad is it really?
Pretty bad. I mean, you heard what
Those
Gal...
Those are really two different questions.
I'll just interpret it the way, you know, I'm going to. I mean, Gal said what the median rating for a state is. Yeah. Just about every state is rated in the AA category, right? I mean, we're... Below that is the single A category, and then below that is where we're at in the triple B category. So it's pretty bad to get to this level. No state has been at our level. And I'll remind you, when we talk about junk bond status...
Spec grade.
It's speculative. Wait, let me tell you the term again. She said
we're in a
speculative position, Eva.
Yeah. I use that too, but I like junk. So... It draws the readers in, you know, online. So I'll remind you that our bonds that are a step below general obligation, the ones that are called appropriation-backed bonds, like, you know, about $3 billion of Met Pair bonds, they're already junk. So, I mean, that's, you know, our higher ed system. There is, I don't think by any of the three rating agencies, there is a state public higher ed system that has so many universities at a junk level. I mean, it's pretty bad. And I would, to finish up on that, I would like to just add on to what Lawrence had to say about, you know, how we get out of this. And I would focus on kind of more of a near-term issue of how to avoid actually falling to junk. The rating agencies have laid out pretty clearly what could trigger it, right? So specifically Moody's, I think, their big issue is our unfunded pension liability, which is just about $130 billion, right? And it could get worse come when the new numbers come in this fall. And, you know, so pension reform, yeah, of course, it will be challenged, whatever happens, but there is a lot of support for President Cullerton's plan. You know, we won't know ultimately until Justice Burke and her colleagues decide, you know, whether or not it's legal and doesn't violate the state constitution. But I think that's what the rating agencies are looking for, is some kind of action on pensions. The action that the budget included on pensions, most of that just relieves near-term payments, right? So that's not a positive. When we issue the $6 billion and pay down our backlog, which today stood at $15 billion, according to the comptroller's website, If somehow we add to that after we've borrowed to pay it down, we're in trouble. You know, those are a couple of the big triggers. And then, of course, I don't know if anything's going to happen in the legislature till the election. Will there be a capital bill? Maybe Elaine would have better insights on that. But later in the year, we are probably going to have an imbalance, a gap that we are going to have to close, right, based on whether revenues come in as they're expected to, you know, and whether the Thompson Center gets sold. And if we don't address that deficit, that's another trigger point. So aside from, you know, every point that Lawrence so eloquently made is spot on, but you know, there are I guess what I'm talking about is, yes, let's not allow the hole to be dug any deeper. Let's start to, you know, get our way out of it now.
Thank you, Yvette. I think that those are all very good points. And, you know, we could talk about this pension stuff for a little while. And
Can I add a point?
Sure.
Okay. I just want to add another point to what Yvette is saying. I think it's what she's saying is true, that the pension issue is a big driver. But there's another part of the driver here that people need to appreciate, which is the fact that the state has not lived within its means for quite a long time. So the idea of what I may call putting bills in the drawer has created a huge mess. They've had sort of this roller coaster of when things are good, they would pay them down. When they weren't so good, they would build up. But the fact that on the whole, they're not in a position now where there's sustained balance and living outside the means, which basically means living over your budget, like, you know, having a diamond wish list and a beer pocketbook. So I think, you know, sustained budget balance is another very important, and I would say almost equally important, issue. It's important to have realistic expectations and assumptions about what you're going to have to do, whether that on the pension is what you assume you're going to earn or whether what you've got, you know, what you have to pay. But a lot of this really is about imbalance between revenues and expenditures and putting bills in the drawer and not paying them. So it's just something else to think about.
Thank you. Certainly, that's I wanted to circle back, but what Gail said is spot on. Elaine, since we were talking about pensions just before, and you know a little bit about that, having, you know, lived through it, thank you for your service with that. We can't thank you enough. Dave Lundy asks this question, and I think it's spot on. And I think this is for Elaine, but if anyone wants to chime in, they can. I'm trying to be respectful of time. Can the debt be paid and the budget be balanced on an ongoing basis with a 4.99 tax rate? And what are the prospects for the next budget?
I think the answer is clearly yes. We can live within that 4.95% income tax rate on the individual side and 7% on the corporate side. To my mind, the question really is, what is the impact on the current services that we are able to provide? We can make the pension payment. We can pay down the backlog of bills. We can do all those things. What suffers is our current services. And then I come back to the votes in the General Assembly, because no one really wants to decimate public education. No one wants to decimate higher education. But that's the situation in which we find ourselves. So the answer is yes, we can live within it. It's just a question of what other services the citizens of the state of Illinois expect and require from their state government. I don't see us getting out of this backlog of bills for another 8 to 10 years. I think it's going to take us that long to do that. And in that period of time, I think you're going to continue to see the General Assembly and the governor wrestle with how do we balance our current services with the backlog of bills and the overwhelming pension debt.
So thank you, Elaine. Peter, are you here somewhere close? Okay. So Elaine just answered his question anyway. So I've got some stuff on highways, construction, and this one. There are actually one before I'm going to ask the Amazon question, because there's an Amazon question here. Imagine that. I'm going to toss this one to whomever. I really don't know who I think you all could have something to say about this. Deborah Jefferson from BMO, where are you? Ooh, now they know if they're not here. I don't always answer their question, ask their question, but it's a good one, so I'm going to ask it.
Oh, over there in the back.
See? You got to tell me where you are, because sometimes I don't ask your question if you're not here, but it's a good question, so I'm going to ask it. What other factors other than quality spreads, compression, signaled the end of the party, end of the party for high yield? Did I just stump the panel?
Can you repeat the question?
Yes.
That's vocabulary
what other
I don't
factors?
Understand.
What other factors other than quality spreads, compression, signaled the end of the party for high yield?
Is that English?
Yeah, but it's more about, yeah. I think she's a...
Have we stumped you?
Yeah. Well, I think she's using a lot of technical language related to...
She's a banker. It's what we do.
Right. But I think what her question is, when will people stop buying Illinois debt? Right, would be another way. That the party ends when the government.
Deborah, is that basically what you're saying? Yeah.
Right. So when will we? When can we predict when, in the case of this, the state of Illinois, I think a better place to watch would be the Chicago Public Schools. Right, the Chicago Public Schools are under enormous financial stress.
Yeah.
They were successful, and the General Assembly provided over $450 million in new revenue sources to them. I want to call it revenue sources because part of it was the gift of another property tax increase for the city of Chicago that was approved by the General Assembly, $125 million for the pension levy. But so looking back, the last time the Chicago Public Schools got into real bad financial shape in the late 70s, early 80s, it was the local bankers that said, we can't make sense out of what your books are. We're not going to lend you any more money. And so they were in a crisis. 10 years ago, we used to think that we never would have thought the state of Illinois would be teetering on non-investment grade. We never would have predicted that the city of Chicago would be junk or non-investment grade. There are high-yield funds out there that will chase the return, and there doesn't seem to be a limit to the appetite to buy distressed debt until there's not. Until people, and that's the way it works in the market, that you can sell for as long as people will buy, and there is not a great deal of predictability. One of the great benefits of the state having a budget now is that it did not sink into non-investment grade or junk bond, because what we know and what we see at the city and the Chicago Public Schools and the Chicago Park District is once the rating agencies bring you down to junk or non-investment grade rating, you don't get out very soon. It takes a long, long time. So I can't predict when the party is going to end on an exact date, because there seems to be always a little more appetite with a different security in terms of providing the repayment. But we are very much at the end of the line rather than the middle of it for the city and probably the state of Illinois.
Does anybody else have a comment on
that? I would add to that, I mean, Lawrence's focus there was on CPS, which is junk rated. Chicago, Moody's rate Chicago at a speculative grade, but the other three rating agencies have it at investment grade. So, you know, what does the municipal market like? They like predictability, and when they buy bonds, they don't want the value of those bonds to take a hit, right? So right now, the city of Chicago and the state's trajectory are, you know, not on, you know, a big spike, but have improved, right? CPS is still down there. Yes, they've you know, their budget deficit has been dealt with, you know, pretty well with the state help, and then, you know, Mayor Emanuel's commitment to provide at least $80 million, and there'll probably be an additional TIF surplus. But CPS is really the shakiest, and so, you know, that probably remains like the biggest high yield, you know, bond of what high yield folks are going to be interested in. Part of the problem, though, for the state and the city and CPS is what I said is this cluster risk and contagion. So the city of Chicago early this year sold $1 billion of bonds, and you would think that the interest rate penalty they paid would have shrunk from the previous year because they passed new funding for pensions, which, you know, many, like Moody's, believes is flawed. But still, it's new money to go towards pensions. Three of the rating agencies stabilized their outlook, and they paid a record penalty of over 3 percentage points, higher than they had in the past. So, you know, part of the issue is just how this cluster risk, where local governments and the state are all tied together. So I don't know if that answered the question, but
I think it added to the comment, so thank you. Elaine?
Can I add a political perspective here? So as we've watched the ratings go down and down and down, it's a bit like somebody jumping off of a 50-floor building, and by floor 30, nothing really bad has happened yet, you know? And it isn't until you hit the bottom that something that you realize that was not probably the greatest idea. So in this political high-stakes battle between the governor and the legislature, you know, okay, some of the bond rating got lowered again. Nothing really bad happened. Bond rating got lowered again. Nothing really bad happened. State's still functioning. Schools are still open. You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's not, I'm being a little flippant here. It was crumbling for sure. But, you know, again, if your primary goal is not the rating agencies, if your primary goal is, you know, how do I win, then, you know, lowering the it just didn't matter that much as the ratings went down.
You were channeling your inner Rich. It was fine. You were channeling your inner Rich, Miller.
I was channeling my inner Rich there, yes.
So this question, and I'm going to try to combine both Graham's question and Layton's question. Layton is from the Internet Public Trust, and Graham is from Taft Law Firm. So Graham's question is, will the cooperation between Mayor Emanuel and Governor Rauner, with them joining forces, how will that affect the bond rating? But then, Layton's question says, how might Chicago and Illinois work with Wisconsin and Indiana with respect to railroad infrastructure, et cetera, all of this in hopes of getting Amazon and the plan for Chicago? So I'm trying to mesh those two questions together, and I probably didn't do a good job at it, but yeah. Can we try to mesh that together? I'm doing that for time's sake, actually. Well, can we try?
Let me take a stab at the first portion of the question. I guess the most important thing to keep in mind is that when we develop our opinion, it's based on what we see and observations and how it all settles out. So the fact that there may be an alignment between the mayor and the governor may be very nice, but until something happens, either at the city level or the state level, that you can actually see, that's tangible. It's very nice. It may lead to something good, but that in and of itself, an alignment doesn't necessarily change our view. What affects our view is observable behavior, observable results. So alignment may move you towards that, but an alignment in and of itself doesn't necessarily change a view.
Okay.
And I really can't speak about Amazon other than I use it a lot.
I would like to
Did you say other than you use it a lot?
Yeah.
I would just add to that, you know, rating-wise, is that, like Lauren said, rating agencies are much quicker to downgrade than they are to upgrade. And as Gail said, you have to see, you know, tangible proof of an improved relationship. In the long time that I've been covering local Chicago, CPS in the state, and all of the Midwestern states and local governments, I have never seen, you know, rating agencies cite as such a significant factor in their credit profile. Political dysfunction, I mean, that really played out prominently in all of the rating reports. Mm-hmm. And, Gail, we'll see if she'll back me up on this, but I just don't see that very often. And so,
California is the other place where you saw it at the state level. And they were down in this neighborhood, too.
And, you know, on a higher note or a more, you know, positive note of what we could achieve is California was nearly at where we are, and they're in pretty, their coffers are pretty flush, and they're, you know, back in the A category, double A.
Yeah.
Who would ever thought we'd want to be California?
Right.
Whoever thought Governor Brown would be viewed as showing us the way financially to move your state.
Right?
But I think it's worth pointing out that one of the successes of the new Governor Brown, that is his second tour as the governor of the state, his initial reaction when taking over the state was to present the budget with the available money that they, the state had. Mm-hmm. And that had a very chilling impact on everyone because it showed that the state did not have enough money to not just to do the things that people wanted, but what the state needed to do. So after a year of bringing the California Assembly to the reality of what they could afford, then there was an effort, an educational campaign that was really aimed at going to referendum on a series of different cuts as well as increases in their revenue. They also benefit from beautiful weather and a place where a lot of people want to live. Those are things that this week we can sell, but not so much in December. In terms of attracting Amazon, the attraction of Amazon is the same as any business, and which is businesses want stability and predictability. They don't want to guess what the tax rates are going to be in the state of Illinois. They don't want to guess whether their employees or schools are going to open or not. So there's a lot that we have going for us in the short term, in that we have our schools opened, and we have the General Assembly has authorized and is now law a tax increase. It doesn't appear likely that the General Assembly is ready to roll up its sleeves and raise more taxes. It's likely then that the focus has to be on reduction. In terms of what Amazon is going to need, it's likely that they're going to want certain infrastructure incentives. If you're bringing 50,000 people to the city of Chicago or anywhere else, that's going to have a transportation impact. There's a the second chart that we had passed out is really in anticipation of people who want to talk about what about the state getting a capital plan going? What about investing in long term? It shows you that chart shows you the amount of debt service that the state of Illinois has going forward, including the expected $6 billion in debt that the governor has indicated that they were going to issue to bring down the unpaid bills. The important thing that I would want you to pay attention to is that if you were a reasonable person, it looks like at about 2034, the state of Illinois will be able to responsibly issue some more debt, because part of that debt is going to pay off the pension bonds that we issued. Part of, you know, up until 2034, we're going to take 12 years to pay off the half of the unpaid bills that we racked up in the last 3 years. And that comes at a tremendous cost. So for those who want to sell a big capital plan, they need to identify how the state is going to pay for it. That's going to require something a little bit better than the video poker and the candy tax that the last capital plan that went through Illinois is. Because what we found when we used that, those as our source for capital investment, they didn't come forward, and the state had to take actual operating cash and put it in to pay the debt service. So the state's not well positioned to issue a significant amount of debt. It barely has enough to issue. Really, we have about 6 months debt service on the $6 billion borrowing that we can identify.
I think it's going to be very difficult for the state to, for the General Assembly and certainly this governor to agree on any sort of general capital infrastructure program. I don't see that at all in the short run. However, the General Assembly and the governor do like to, and I would say this is true of all General Assemblies and governors, they do like to attract businesses and to vote for what they can sell as tens of thousands of jobs. So if there is something that a specific ask that Amazon has, and it looks like we're really in the hunt, I could see the General Assembly acting on that. You know, we're the body that gave Sears an incentive when they were clearly That's going right. down the tubes. And so I apologize if I offend anybody in the audience. But, you know, so
the Sears shoppers.
Yeah, so we are perfectly capable of giving things away when we think that there are tens of thousands of jobs on the line.
Thank you. Ruby, Representative Nickerts just answered your question. I don't know where you are, but there you. She answered your question. She knew. Yeah, did you ask her that before? She answered the question without me even having to ask it. Again, every time we have a panel, we could talk for another 20, 30 minutes, but I do want to be respectful of everyone's time. Just as we opened up, I'm going to ask you guys to do a 30-second close on what you think the future is looking like. So, Gail, we'll start with you.
Thank you. I think the one thing that that California and Illinois have in common, besides the negativeness we were talking about before, but the thing to keep in mind is that both states have a wealth in them. They may fluctuate, but they're wealthy, quote-unquote, assets. The big issue that California had was the difficulty that it struggled with about revenue raising and the refusal for a long time to live within the means. Those are kind of similar issues here, right? The flat tax makes it more difficult to access when things are good. That is the downfall for California. Their revenues swing tremendously with how well capital gains and the economy is going. So I think the thing I would say is the state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, have very strong bases. And they have strong tax bases and a good economy. So I think the thing to keep in mind is living within your means, having realistic expectations, and developing a plan. And sometimes it is hard at the beginning. But there is a base here. We're not talking about Puerto Rico prior to the storm. Sorry for mentioning that. But, you know, they were in recession for 8 or 9 years. There was no way out of that. This is a different situation. And I think governance is a part of it.
Thank you, Gail. Yvette, quickly.
Well, I would say tack on to what Gail said about our economy, and again, what so many folks, not just the rating agencies, but investors, right, who really follow us closely and have their own analyst, you know, they were really disturbed by the lack of political will, right, because that's what they will just repeatedly say is that we have, you know, we're just one tax or two tax increases away from solving our problems. So now we have a tax increase in place. Maybe it's not enough. Maybe you like or you don't like the budget. But it's really going to come down to what Gail said about living within our means. And, and also improving the economy, creating jobs, attracting businesses with stability. And, you know, the question I would pose is, what's going to happen in the next year, year and a half? Are we just at a standstill until the legislative races and the governor's race is over and we know the results? You know, we really need a capital budget. You know, the $31 billion Illinois jobs now is really winding down in large part because, as Lauren said, we can't afford to borrow anymore because the tax revenues put in place have not generated the revenue that they were supposed to, and we've had to dip into the general fund. So, you know, I guess that's, you know, I'm just wondering, are we at a standstill? Are we going to, is the legislature and the governor going to be able to work together in the next year? That's going to determine whether or not, you know, we dig a little deeper into the hole or whether we continue to chip away.
Thank you, Yvette. Representative Nickerts.
The word I always use for this is discipline, that we are simply going to have to exercise discipline as the citizens of the state of Illinois and your representatives to dig our way out of this. I do think it's going to be a rough go until the 2018 election cycle is over because there is a lack of trust at the legislative leaders and the governor's level. I don't see that changing, and so it, you know, we are going to be grinding along and bumping along until until the 2018 election. And I think we have to have realistic expectations about what the services government is going to be able to deliver given the financial situation that we have. And I hope that the legislative leaders that have a larger bully pulpit than the rank-and-file members of the General Assembly will speak to that and tell the citizens of Illinois the truth about what to expect and from the services that, this, that the government can afford given the level of taxation.
Thank you, Elaine. Lawrence, can we share that chart that you got?
Yeah, we put those charts out on the table.
Okay.
That's why I was referring to them. And if you want any more of them, there's a couple staff of the Civic Federation who remind me they did all the hard work, and all the knowledge about government, tax, and finance comes from our outstanding staff. Aaron Oates is here, and Katie Broom, who helped publicize that. I'll close with one thing. We can't wait for the next governor or the governor election or re-election to address the problems we have. We have a little bit, a short amount of breathing room because the state of Illinois was not downgraded to junk. We are now going to take a spectacular action and borrow $6 billion to make up for our last 2 years of mistakes. We're going to take 12 years to pay it off. We need the state to come together and build confidence, show that we have the ability to govern. That is really what it has come down to. Can our government institutions live within their means? Can they move us forward? Can they set up that framework? We are losing population in the state of Illinois. There are many horrors that we can point out to as a result of the budget impasse, including the underfunding for our most vulnerable citizens. But the worst thing that I think we did was we did not recognize the importance of keeping our young people not only safe, but in Illinois. So higher education needs to be rationalized. Addressing violence has to be a top priority. All of that for the last 2 years has been relatively silent in the General Assembly because we don't have a budget. We can't really project. So we need to move forward. We need to be honest with people. And all of you need to hold your elected officials, not just your governor candidate, not just your U.S. senator and congressperson, but your state representative and state senator. They have a responsibility in articulating what their plan is for fixing the state of Illinois, what they support. I have a long list of things that most people don't support. We need to know what they do support in order to fix the state. Thank you.
Well said. Thank you to this great panel.